नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, we're up to discussing the topic of Bharata. And Bharat Maharaj has gone to the forest, or he's gone to Purvaha Ashram at the Gandaki River. And he's deeply absorbed in pure devotional service to a degree that his material desires are completely eradicated. And he's experiencing deeper and deeper and deeper stages of absorption in thought of the personality of Godhead Krishna. And he's, the lake of his heart is overwhelmingly flowing with joyful emotions in a mood of service to the personality of Godhead. And his body is erupting with symptoms of bhava, just like we read the description in Nectar Devotion he's experiencing, just from Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. He's come to the Bhava Bhakti platform. And then one fateful day, going early in the morning, performing his morning duties, relieving his body of nature's call, taking bath in the sacred river, sitting by the side of the river, in a sanctified place, in a sanctified condition, in a very tranquil state. An event took place. Innocent, not like what Rajamila had to experience. It was very innocent. On the opposite shore of the Gandaki River, there was a female deer, pregnant deer, as deer will do, looking this way, looking that way, fearfully, because danger might come at any moment. And so she was drinking water and then looking and looking and drinking water and looking and looking, and she hadn't completed her drinking of water, and suddenly there was a loud of a lion that the Bhagavatam says makes anyone fearful when you hear such a sound. And certainly the deer, she heard such a sound and became very fearful. And in that moment of terrible fear, she had a miscarriage. Prabhupada comments that when women are in pregnancy, they should avoid such extreme, shocking experiences or fearful experiences, because it's known to happen sometimes. Miscarriages can take place. So the baby deer that she was carrying was born right on the spot. But the fear was so great that the female deer jumped. And where the female deer landed, it was near a cave. She crawled in the cave, and the Bhagavatam said she immediately died. Doesn't say exactly what she died of, but she died of fear or something. Had a heart attack, maybe, or something. She died immediately. And as she jumped, this fawn, unborn deer, fell into the water. And there's this king, Bharat, the king of the world, formerly, and sees this little baby deer floating downstream. So he went into the water and rescued the baby deer. Naturally so. I mean, who could let something like that happen? You don't do anything? Oh, I'm a sadhu, I can't do anything. That's not right. So he felt great compassion and rescued the deer. Srila Prabhupada's purport reads, "The laws of nature work in subtle ways unknown to us." Maharaj Bharat was a great king, very advanced in devotional service. He had almost reached the point of loving service to the Supreme Lord. But even from that platform, he could fall down onto the material platform. And then he quotes from Bhagavad Gita. Krishna gives a warning. Chapter 2, text 15, very early in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, "O best among men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress and is steady in both is certainly eligible for liberation." So the converse means, if we become moved, elated by some fortunate circumstance, or shocked by some unfortunate circumstance, and our mental equilibrium is lost, so is our spiritual position. So, what does one need to do? One needs to secure one's spiritual position very strongly, and then one can be neutral in duality. Extremes this way or extremes that way. Don't let go of one's spiritual shelter. Take firm spiritual shelter and stay there. Don't let go. Again, Prabhupada's purport, spiritual salvation and liberation from material bondage must be worked out with great caution. Otherwise, a little discrepancy will cause one to fall down again into material existence. By studying the activities of Maharaj Bharat, we can learn the art of becoming completely freed from all material attachment. So that's the bright side. The bright side is you learn from others' mistakes. You know this description Prabhupada gives, that there's first class intelligence, second class, third class, fourth class intelligence. First class intelligence is you learn just from hearing. Second class is you hear, you haven't yet learned. You see, then you learn. Oh, that's what it means. Okay. Then, third is, you hear, don't quite understand. You see, you don't quite understand. You experience yourself, oh, now I understand. Then you learn. And fourth class is all of those things happen, you still don't learn. repeatedly one foolishly goes on. An example that he gives of that is the animal that doesn't have the capacity to learn. They're in a, he used the word livestock go down. They're in a place where the animals are being kept before they're slaughtered. They're fearful, or some are just chewing on grass and, you know, la-di-da. But in short order, they're going to be killed. So whether they know or they don't know, there's nothing they can do because they're animals. And similarly, the human being has the capacity to know that as soon as you have this material body, death is certain. And the program is to get out of the livestock go down, to get out of that condition of birth and death. So one can be like an animal and ignorant of the fact that there's the spirit soul that's caught in this material bondage, and we're not meant to be in material bondage, we're meant to be free. Beautiful purport in the Bhagavatam where Prabhupada describes that all souls desire this freedom with free spirit to move as one wishes and so forth. So that's a natural aspiration, but if that natural aspiration becomes covered by circumstance and one just goes on with the circumstance, like, that's life. Not questioning, well, wait a minute, that's not life, that's suffering. And nobody wants to suffer, but we all have to suffer, so how come? Inquisitive spirit leads to seeing the way out, but if you don't even ask the questions, you're not going to see the way out, and cut. And then repeated birth and death. Human form of life is meant. Brahma jigyasa. Be inquisitive into the nature of higher truth, higher reality. We're meant for that purpose. The human form. So by studying the activities of Bhart Maharaj, we can get a clue how to become free from our material attachments, or the other way around, how material attachments have caught us. And we should be very cautious in life about our, not our Maharajas, but our material attachments. Very cautious. And then proceed. And one of the things to be cautious about that's highlighted in this story or history is compassion. Couple things. Compassion is always appreciated in the world when people act for the welfare of others, to some degree sacrificing their own comforts, seeing to the well-being of others. It's appreciated in society. It's a feature of goodness. And another is, as one gradually progresses spiritually, compassion is something that naturally becomes more prominent, awakens, and there's a sense of wanting to do something for others. It follows behind spiritual progress. Now, where do you repose that tendency for compassion? If one is not properly guided, one is influenced by false ego and the mode of ignorance, compassion will be placed upon the wrong thing. And when compassion is placed upon the wrong thing, it can cause one to fall from one's spiritual position. Even literal acquired spiritual position, one can fall. So one should be properly guided, and one should be very careful applying that. The compassion should be applied on the spiritual platform, in the spiritual conception of life. Maharaj Bharat's compassion for the deer was the beginning of his fall down into the material world. Specifically, his compassion for the deer on the platform of the body, to the exclusion of the elevation and welfare of the soul. We'll say that again in a different way. Taking a holistic conception of who we are, our true identity is that we're spirit soul, but the holistic picture is there are other parts. I mean, the true identity is the soul, it's the animating factor within the body, it's who we are. But for some time being, we also have a body and a mind. And so, concern about for our own welfare, the condition of the body or the condition of the mind, or the condition of the heart, and the condition of the soul. There must be proper alignment, because if one of those components, although it's not who we are, if one of those components is greatly disturbed, then it's very hard to stay focused on the spiritual conception. Unless we're very advanced, it's very hard. So we need to attend to things like the amplifier system and the swinging back and things like that. But you know, that doesn't create or destroy our spiritual well-being. Circumstances of life cannot create spiritual well-being. Circumstances of life cannot destroy spiritual well-being. Spiritual well-being, spiritual well-being is a hantuki. When spiritual well-being is established nicely, there's nothing material that can create it, there's nothing material that can stop it, because it's coming from another platform. Something material can't create it, something material can't stop it. Just like the discussion about counteracting tendencies for sin. Because the souls that are in this world, their spirit is rebellious to God, towards God. And so they do things that are inconsistent with the natural order of God. That's sin. When we act against or contrary to the interest of God, that's sin. And when we act according to the interest of God, that's piety. That's good. But bad and good is not the essence of our spiritual well-being. If you go through some process to remove the reactions for bad, if still tendencies of rebellious spirit towards God exist, we'll do those things anyways. Okay, so this point is, spiritual solution is required. And compassion should be similarly applied. The real problem of existence is we've forgotten our relationship with God. And then the downstream consequential events, like, you know, we get a material body and a material mind, and they demand our attention. They demand our service. And we busy ourselves attending to the demands of the body and the mind and abandon our real interest, the interest of the soul. It's just part of the consequence of forgetting our relationship with Krishna. And we get so busy, we don't have time. Just ask people, would you like to come? Just, oh, I don't have time. I'd like to come, but I don't have time. I'm too busy with my mind and senses. They're very demanding. Looking at what Bharat Maharaj did looks like the right thing to do. He was a king. And a king's duty is to give protection. He had the capacity. He exercised according to his propensity. He did his duty. He did the right thing. But it's now being said that that was the beginning of his fall down. How can doing the right thing be the beginning of fall down? If you misapply the right thing, it can become the wrong thing. The misapply is lose the spiritual perspective, the spiritual dimension, apply compassion to the body, forgetful of the condition of the soul, not just the holistic picture, just leave out the soul, just be concerned about the body. That's the beginning of one's fall down. In Bharat Maharaj's case or in our case. So following that portion of this history, Sukadeva Goswami details the subsequent steps that he went through. First step is described as he became overly absorbed and affectionate to the deer, like ridiculous. He began to raise and maintain it by giving it grass. He was always careful to protect it from attacks of tigers and other animals. When it itched, he petted it. And in this way, he tried to keep it in a comfortable condition. He sometimes kissed it out of love, being attached to the deer. Bharat Maharaj forgot the rules and regulations for advancement of spiritual life. And he forgot to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After a few days, he forgot everything about spiritual advancement. Boom, boom, boom. Like dominoes, cause and effect. Purport. From this, we can understand how we have to be very cautious in executing our spiritual duties by observing the rules and regulations and regularly chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. If we neglect to do this, we also will eventually fall down. Or we have already fallen down if we neglect those practices. Become a little slack over here, a little slack over there. Before, very quickly, the bottom falls out and you're plummeting downwards. It happens. So this is one of the lessons. Don't be negligent in spiritual practices. Prabhupada quotes Bhagavad Gita 18.5, where Krishna says, yajna, dana, tapas, karma, natyajyam, karyam, eva, tat. These four things, they're not to be neglected. Acts of sacrifice, charity, penance, are not to be given up, but should be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great soul. So, don't think, oh, I become a great soul. I become very spiritually elevated. I don't need these practices anymore. Big problem. Even thinking like that is a big problem, but it leads to another problem. Slackening in those things that are nourishing the soul's well-being. And again, Prabhupada comments, the activities of Bharat Maharaj should be carefully studied for spiritual advancement. There is that tendency that in the beginning, maybe there's a little surrendering to take up spiritual practices, but when we get on board with spiritual practices, we take them very seriously. And then, it's not at all uncommon, after some time of taking it very seriously, you know, here the curve goes slowly up, 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 then we take them very seriously, and they stay for some time, and then down, 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 down. And then we feel some discomfort, and they go up, 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 and down, 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 down. The sine curve phenomena is very common in spiritual life. We should not become victims of that slackening program for whatever the reason. Distraction, complacency, the other end, suffering, something, something, something. One shouldn't slacken in one's spiritual practices at any cost. And we've seen examples of it where in our company or in the greater ISKCON society, someone practices nicely, they become spiritually advanced. Then something happens, something, some attachment forms, some obstacle arises, something happens, some calamity, something happens, and then it's like a free fall. That which brought us to an uplifted position is to always be valued and nurtured and given attention to. Okay, so before we go on, just there's two main lessons that we're being instructed here. Our spiritual practices must always take a priority position. We may be attending to some service. In this case, it's like, you know, very unusual service. Not, you know, the everyday service. It can be everyday service or it can be some extraordinary service. But when attending to service, we should not become inattentive to the spiritual practices that are lifting us up. Just like our discussion yesterday about Varnashram as necessary for persons who can't take shelter nicely of the hearing and chanting process. So we're taking shelter of that hearing and chanting process as primary. That's what we're instructed to do. That should never, no matter what service is going on, that's the priority, and somehow the other service needs to be done. Prabhupada said once, a devotee was in the hospital. They had pneumonia. They were in an oxygen tent. Otherwise they couldn't breathe. And they explained to Prabhupada, it's hard to breathe. And because it's hard to breathe, it's hard to chant. I'm feeling terrible because I've taken vows to chant and it's very difficult to chant. What should I do? So Prabhupada explained, there's these three stages. You first take care of your health. Then you take care of your sadhana. Then you attend to your service. Doesn't mean, oh, I'm sick now, I don't chant. It's just, you know, if you attend to health, just like if there's fire, ill health, and death, those three things, Chanakya Pandit said, they are to be attended to immediately. Not just, oh, there's a fire in the house, but I have to finish my japa. Or something. I have to honor prasadam. There are emergency things. Health is one of them. And as far as health permits, complete your chanting. And after having completed your sadhana, then whatever service. And if one of the things gets dropped, it's not sadhana for service. That's ordinary, and then there's extraordinary, and still the extraordinary, we don't like, you know, be negligent. Because making an exception can become the rule very quickly. Mara is very slick, very tricky. So don't make exception. And the other is compassion. The other lesson is, where do you place compassion? The lesson very clearly is compassion is to be placed upon elevating a soul to Krishna consciousness, my own or someone else's, and that's the target where compassion should be placed. And if we misplace compassion, that's the beginning of falling from the spiritual platform. Two very simple lessons. We'll see how they unfold next. So, Shukadeva Goswami goes on describing the thought process of Bharat. And it really is like silly. It doesn't sound like a king at all. It doesn't even sound like a really neophyte person. Alas, this helpless young deer, by the force of time, which is an agent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this deer has lost its relatives and friends and has taken shelter of me. It does not know anyone but me. As I have become its father, mother, brother, and relatives, this deer is thinking in this way, and it has full faith in me. It does not know anyone but me. Notice what's the center is not the deer, it's but himself. Therefore, I should not be envious and think that for the deer, my own welfare will be destroyed. I should certainly raise, protect, gratify, and fondle it. When it has taken shelter with me, how can I neglect it? So listen to this conclusion. Even though the deer is disturbing my spiritual life, I realize that a helpless person who has taken shelter cannot be neglected. That would be a great fault. So when we're deciding what we're going to do, we're walking down the path of life, and something, we have to decide what to do about something. Commonly, at least a religious person, will consider, okay, what are principles that are to be applied in life? What's right and what's wrong? What's to be done, what's not to be done? And commonly in life, there are multiple things, multiple principles to consider. Something to be done, something not to be done. What Bharat Maharaj is doing here is he's convincing himself of a lower principle to the exclusion of the higher principle. The higher principle is his spiritual well-being, and from that position of spiritual well-being, to be able to then extend spiritual well-being to others. And with that spiritual well-being to others, very possibly one is attending to some need of the body or some need of the mind. But from the platform of helping that soul come to the spiritual well-being platform. Very similar to the discussion we had yesterday about Varnashram. If one is interested, the world around us, people may not be ready to take to hearing and chanting. So here's this other little but lesser position, Varnashram. So let me help people come to some position of shelter by offering Varnashram to them. But one can lose one's spiritual life and just become a diminished spiritual position. That's not what's intended when you're offering compassion to others. So this is yet another lesson or another mistake where the prior priority position of fixing one's consciousness upon the personality of Godhead and one's dealings with others, fixing one's consciousness upon the personality of Godhead, that he's at the center. It's something like the discussion that took place between Yudhisthira Maharaj and the Yaksha that came out of the lake, and the Yaksha is presenting different questions. And they're very complex questions. And the Yaksha, after asking several questions about should this be done, should that be done, he said, there are times when we come across circumstances where there's multiple principles or to be done, not to be done, standards that are mutually contradictory. And how are you to decide when there are things that are all important, then they're mutually contradictory? Correct? We find that. We find that right in the first place. Note, the very first place where, in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, where Krishna Katha, directly topics about Krishna are presented, it's one of those circumstances. Right away, first thing, there's Arjuna who takes a vow to kill, to bring the head of Ashwatthama before Draupadi so she can, when she's offering oblations into the funeral pyre of her five sons, she can stand on the head of Ashwatthama, and she brings him back alive with his sword raised, ready to cut off his head right in front of Draupadi. And Draupadi says, don't do it. And Yudhisthira, his brother, says, she's right, don't do it. And Krishna says, do it. And Bhima says, if you don't do it, I'll do it. So he has these two contradictory instructions. Krishna says, but his elder brother says, and his wife, for whom he took the promise, says something different. Do it, don't do it. You can't do it and not do it. It's either one or the other. We have contradictory things that we have to do and not do. It happens. It may not be something so radical as that. What to do? The lesson is, don't put spiritual well-being on a priority level lower than some other thing. To do that, to put some other thing on a priority level above spiritual well-being, you just got covered by Maya. Or your Mayaya Paritagyana. Your intelligence is stolen away by illusion. And sometimes intelligent people do that to themselves. They allow their material intelligence to convince them that they're doing the right thing when they're doing something that's wrong. They've have wrong, meaning misplaced priorities. So now he's like, I'm convinced. I'm the wrong thing is the right thing. And the right thing is the wrong thing. And he's convinced. In Prabhupada's purport, he writes, when a person is advanced in spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness, he naturally becomes very sympathetic toward all living entities suffering in the material world. Naturally, such an advanced person thinks of the suffering of the people in general. However, if one does not know the material sufferings of fallen souls and becomes sympathetic because of bodily comforts, as in the case of Bharat Maharaj, such sympathy or compassion is a cause of one's fall down. So we need to know the root of suffering if we want to remove suffering. We need to know the root of our own suffering when we're suffering. Not just attend to adjusting the circumstance. I like to think of this as trying to adjust a shadow. When you don't pay attention to the object that's causing or projecting the shadow, you busy yourself with the shadow of reality rather than the root of reality. And material life is so much made up of that. Or trying to be an enjoyer of a dream when it's just a dream. But we don't like the suffering in dream. Nightmares we don't like, and happy dreams we like. But life is the same. It's night dreaming or daydreaming. In the daytime there may be things that we like and things that we don't like. And our business is not just to adjust them. You know, try to sustain the things that make us happy and get rid of the things that make us unhappy. The root of either is our misconception, our forgetfulness of the misconception of the goal of life, and that real happiness, because our real happiness is simply staying in our position of humble service in relation to the personality of Godhead. That's our real happiness, whatever the circumstance. And when that is accomplished, anything is okay. One can serve Krishna happily from any circumstance of life. It's not just nice words or high thinking. It's real. It's something that we experience all the time. Things can be great, peachy. Put a little whipped cream on top, you know, and a cherry on top of that, really nice. But if we've forgotten our relationship with Krishna, it's empty, it's hollow. So many people in this, you know, the highest suicide rate is amongst the people who are fabulously wealthy. Because they're at the top of the mountain, and from the view, you know, they were expecting happiness, and it's not happiness. One of our GBC members, Brother Narayan Prabhu, was telling this story. Forget exactly how it goes. A very nice farmer is very carefully attending to his crops, and after on harvest time he brings the bounty of his crops to the marketplace, and he sees in the marketplace there's the merchant. He's rocking in his rocking chair, he's sipping lemonade, and he's got his pan scale there, and he's thinking, I work so hard. Here's this merchant, he's just sitting here, he looks very calm, got his fan going, and you know, he's very comfortable. Maybe I could become a merchant and enjoy life. And the merchant is thinking, I have to pay all these taxes, I work, I have to give all this money to the king, and I wish I could become a king. So he goes to pay his taxes to the king. And the king is sitting there, and he's attending to the affairs of state, and so many political challenges of other kings that are harassing him, and some unrest amongst the citizens. And he's looking out the window, and he sees the farmer tilling his fields, and says, "Wouldn't it be so nice to have a simple life like a farmer, not have all these pains and worries?" On the other side of the fence, the grass looks greener. Because the position of happiness is not achieved by whatever particular activity we're engaged in or the particular circumstances in which we find ourselves. The happiness is found within. The happiness, from a spiritual perspective, is our loving relationship with Krishna. We must be very wary, very cautious, repeating the word caution. Prabhupada uses it again and again. Prosecuting spiritual life, we must be very cautious to not have circumstances take our attention away from what our purpose is. We should stay fixed in purpose. Yavasayatmika buddhi ekeha puranandana. And what's that purpose? That buddhi is Krishna's happiness. We're the servant. Krishna is the master, and we want to be situated in that relationship of servant unto the master. And whatever the circumstances the master chooses to bring to us, we'll intelligently work our way through those circumstances. But let me stay fixed upon the purpose of this service, praising Krishna. Not my happiness and my comfort and my mind and my senses. Krishna's service is the focus. And the root cause of problems is we forget that. If one is actually sympathetic to fallen, suffering humanity, he should try to elevate people from material consciousness to spiritual consciousness. So now, because the story's focus, or this history's focus, is upon compassion for the deer, aside from our own well-being, what about the well-being of others? Our well-being of others should also be similarly focused upon their spiritual well-being. When we see a circumstance where someone is in a suffering condition, don't forget what the root of that suffering condition is. It's spiritual. From the spiritual disease has come the material disease. From this spiritual misapplication of free will, now one is in this condition where their material circumstances are very troubling. So the root cause must be seen and acted upon when they're exhibiting compassion. Bharat Maharaj didn't do that. Prabhupada, to underscore this point, he makes reference to Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, again, text 15. Yam hi na supposed to be peaceful. Sounds like a highway. Yam hi na vitunjete purusham purusharshava. As far as the material body is concerned, we cannot do anything for anyone. That is to say, suffering comes of its own accord as happiness comes of its own accord. We're not going to help someone by adjusting the shadow. We're going to help someone by addressing the need of the soul. However, by the grace of Krishna, we may raise a person to spiritual consciousness if we ourselves are in spiritual consciousness and we ourselves are following the rules and regulations of spiritual practice. If, on the other hand, we give up our own spiritual activities and simply become concerned with the bodily comforts of others, Prabhupada writes, we will fall into a dangerous position. But compassion needs to be properly placed. We can certainly attend to the needs of someone who is hungry, or all those things that make up philanthropy and altruism. We can attend to those things. When I was GBC chairman the year before, that was when the Haiti earthquake happened. So because I was GBC chairman, I was getting all these messages from people who I'd never met from all around the world saying, are we going to do something? But I was also getting word from people who wanted to do something, saying, you know, is there some way to organize some on-location person or approximate location person to organize the devotees going there and doing something? So, from all around the world, you know, from Australasia and from Europe and from America and from here and there, persons went and money went and supplies went and we did something. Because, you know, that's suffering humanity. It's terrible disaster. And they didn't just, you know, one devotee, I met him as I was traveling, I didn't even know he was going. He's expert at building houses from next to nothing. You know, from rubble, and that's what they had, rubble, and they had to build houses because houses were destroyed. He knew how to do it. But it wasn't just, you know, go and build houses. It was teach those people the practices of spiritual life. In part, endearing those persons to him for having built their house, or medical supplies, or food supplies. You know, attending to the needs of the body and comforting them, the needs of the mind. But the center was the spiritual well-being. Spiritual well-being is at the center, it can't be neglected. We can do those humanitarian things. Spiritual well-being should be at the center. Text number 10, translation, even though one is in the renounced order, one who is advanced certainly feels compassion for suffering living entities. This is Bharat now, his mind. One should certainly neglect his own personal interests, although he may be very important to protect one who has surrendered. So he's a king. And here's this surrendered soul in the form of a baby deer. It's like Maharaj Prikshit when the personality of Kali surrendered. So now he's obliged, because he surrendered, to protect him. So I'm the king, here's a surrendered soul. So he's citing a principle that's a true principle. And this is part of how delusion takes place in good people. They cite something that's true. And they put it in a higher position above something that's of a greater priority. They subordinate the greater priority to the lesser priority and make that the greater priority. And feel compelled, convinced, that they're doing the right thing. There's something like fault finding. This is a classic. You've got to speak the truth, Prabhu. I mean, it's only the truth. they're convinced they're doing the right thing because they're speaking the truth. When there's other things to also be considered besides speaking the truth. Like maybe you have a misunderstanding of what the truth is. Don't you think you should inquire from the other person and getting a complete picture besides speaking what may not be true? And then another thing is, how do you speak it? And what mode of communication do you communicate the truth? Because what are we interested in? We're interested in the elevation of souls. We just run after people with a stick and just go bashing people by in the name of, like, I've got to speak the truth, Prabhu. You know, you're just a disturbance. And that's the truth, Prabhu. So, one should be considered a spiritual principle. In our modern time, like really modern time, there's a term that's being used that has its roots in Buddhism. One of the roots of Buddhism is nonviolence, right? Ahimsa. So they now are turning this around and, you know, the soul is missing and God is missing, but you should be nonviolent towards yourself. And one of the ways you should be nonviolent towards yourself is consider if you heard something about another person where they're in some difficulty, they're struggling, they're having a hard time, and what do you feel? And you should feel that way towards yourself. Soul is missing, God is missing. Be self-compassionate. So self-compassionate has its place in Krishna consciousness. I find myself advising people like that sometimes, because sometimes they're too hard on themselves. They're like, beat themselves up. And, you know, and they don't have any strength left. And they don't have vision left. It's just they're beaten. And then after being beaten, they go and beat themselves some more. So that's not good. But what's the target or objective of this self-compassion, or a phrase that I like to refer to as charity begins at home. Begins at home means within the home. It also means within your own heart. Charity begins at home. Be charitable towards yourself. But when operating or applying those principles, being charitable towards yourself, make sure you're on the platform of the soul. Conception. And because that's the root. What's the spiritual conception, or the spiritual conception, the true conception of life? And be attentive over there on the spiritual conception of life. And from that spiritual conception of life, then comes the body and the mind. You know, because you have one. You have a body and you have a mind. And be kind. On the spiritual conception, on the spiritual platform. But if you don't have the spiritual conception and the spiritual platform, what happens? Everything starts to go down. The sense of ethics and value and merit and poverty, it all goes down. It's unavoidable. It's just like the principle of Buddhism that says religion is nonviolence. Now where does that go? If it's on the platform of the body, it can go any number of different directions, and it does go in any number of different directions. I could, without giving examples and examples, it can go in so many different directions. I'll give one example. There's in Southeast Asia, there's a very popular, prominent Buddhist group that there's this head teacher, and he has this ashram, and he has these sort of brahmachari celibate monks, Buddhist monks that are under his care. And part of what they do each day is they go before Madhukari. They don't call it that, but they go door to door, and whatever people give, that's their meal. But, you know, people may give them unmentionables, and because they, you know, received it, that's their meal. And, you know, he's popular, so people give something to those people, the Buddhist monks that come to their door, all kinds of things. So there's no question of vegetarianism, it's whatever people give. Etc. So there has to be some standard of nonviolence. So what's the standard? If you don't accept the standard of the authority of the personality of Godhead, then something else becomes the standard of the mind, or the standard of somebody. Like Prabhupada's comment to Professor Katowski in Moscow. So let's leave aside, you know, religious view. Let's just take this common thing. Everybody needs a leader. So you have Lenin as your leader. And whatever Lenin says, you do, because you're a follower of Lenin. I also have a leader. My leader is Krishna. Whatever Krishna says, I follow, because I've accepted him as a leader. So what's the difference between you and me? You have Lenin as a leader, I have Krishna as a leader. You've chosen Lenin, I've chosen Krishna. But constitutionally, we all have to accept somebody as our leader and serve them. Now we can talk about the merits of Lenin versus Krishna, and why serving Lenin is better, or why serving Krishna is better. But we're, constitutionally, we're servants. It's our nature. Lenin also has to serve someone. He died. He's not the master. Someone is master above him. So who is that master that we should all be servants? Anyway. Go back to the Bharat Maharaj narration. The mistake of misplaced compassion led to a series of other misplaced intelligence, and how the very verse that he was reciting as a companion verse to the Rig Veda Gayatri Mantra was the Supreme Personality of Godhead is fulfilling the desires of all living entities. This Surya Narayan, the Lord of the Sun Planet, has also expanded a form in the heart of every living being, fulfilling the desires of all living entities in this material world. How does he fulfill that desire? By intelligence. And if he gives the intelligence how to fulfill their material desire, then they fall. And if he gives them the intelligence how to come to him, they go to him. So what's important, the operative principle, is what is our relationship with Krishna. This is Vasudeva. And that the prayer should be, let our consciousness go forever towards you and protect us from being forgetful of you for even a moment. Specific to the point of compassion, let our compassion go to the well-being of the soul. Let our compassion never be diverted to something other than the well-being of the soul and the soul's relationship with the Supreme. in our relationship, in our exchanges and dealings with others, let us not forget that. Dear Lord Krishna, please give us that intelligence. Vidami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upiyanti te. We'll discuss that particular point. I'll mention that particular point a little bit more, and we'll go into it further in our next session. This is coming attractions, and we'll go into it in detail. The world around us is orchestrated under the direction of Super Soul. Yes? Maya Vyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. The whole chara and chara, achara, the moving and non-moving living beings, the whole panorama of this material creation, it's under Krishna's direction. Krishna is in our heart, and he knows our past, he knows our present, and he's providing us opportunities going into the future where we can make some choices. Say it the other way. It's not that our choices are predetermined. We can make choices. Now, things come our way that have some relation with the past. In Bharat Maharaj's case, his past was, there he was in the forest, and previously he was a king. So as a king, he gives protection. Here's a circumstance where he can give protection. Now make a choice. Do you want to protect on the spiritual platform? Do you want to protect on the material platform? He made a choice. He left his spiritual practices, although he knew perfectly well the importance of spiritual practice and was practiced in praying to the Lord, please protect me from making the wrong choice. But he made the wrong choice, and the Lord didn't interfere with his choice. There are opportunities. Life provides us with opportunities to make a series of choices towards him, towards Krishna. And it may be something comfortable, it may be something uncomfortable, it may be something ordinary, it may be something extraordinary. But life is filled, in our advancing in spiritual practice, life is filled with making choices. And the choice that Krishna is recommending for us is Sarvadhamam Pranityaja Manikam Sharanam Vraja Atam Tvam Sarvapapebhyo Mokshayishami Masuchaha. One need not think that a sub-religious principle becomes the primary religious principle. Instead, the primary religious principle should take the primary position. And always we should stay in that position. And if we do so, the choice will take us to Krishna. And if we don't do so, the choice will take us away from Krishna. The external world is but an opportunity for materialists to suffer or enjoy. But both are suffering because both are forgetful of one's relationship with Krishna. For a devotee, it's an opportunity to stay fixed in our relationship with Krishna in varieties of ways. Good fortune, misfortune. They're all varieties of opportunities to stay fixed in our relationship with Krishna. And we can choose like that, or we cannot choose like that. One is the proper use of free will, and the other is the improper use of free will. And now specific to this history is compassion. Where do we choose to place our compassion? In relation to Krishna, or not in relation to Krishna? In relation to Krishna can be in the holistic sense, but in the absence of Krishna, it's not. It's very imperfect, very incomplete, very partial. And I don't know exactly how I'm going to share this with... I've been requested, when I go back to the States, I'm going to be visiting MIT. You know what that is? Massachusetts Institute of Technology. It's like one of the most prestigious educational institutions in the West. You know, Oxford, Cambridge, you know, those two. It's like that. It's in Boston. So the topic that I'm going to be, I'm asked to speak about is compassion in our modern times, or something like that. Appropriate expressions of compassion in our modern times. And somehow with an audience that's not like all of you, who's practicing sadhakas, I'm going to try to communicate the very same message to them that I'm just sharing with you. Because whether one is in your position or their position or whatever position, there are choices that we have to make. And the world is happening. Life is coming at us. And keeps coming at us. And it's, you know, it's very colorful. Sometimes it's purple, sometimes it's black, sometimes it's green, sometimes it's yellow, sometimes it's gold, sometimes it's very colorful. Oh, the rainbow is coming at us. And each circumstance is a little different, and so we have to make some choices how we're going to act. Those things that are coming at us are connected to the things that are behind us. It's not karma for a devotee. For a non-devotee, it's karma. For a devotee, it's an opportunity to make spiritual progress. And how well have we understood our lessons to make the right choices in spiritual progress? And even the particular choice you make is less important than that you remain mindful of the purpose that let me move toward Krishna in making this choice. Because Krishna will do the fine tuning, the correcting. If we have that faith, Krishna will help us. Vidami buddhiyogam tam yenamam upiyanti te. But many cases, all too many cases, we become very quickly in a reactive mode, and a little thing totally takes over our consciousness, and we forget our purpose, you know, the mission of going back to Godhead, and we become absorbed in our whatever the thing is. Trying to, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, it's like the person that's drowning in the ocean and they see some straw floating by. And they try to grab shelter of the straw that's floating by. That's not going to support them. But those straws represent their past pious activities or their past speculative tendencies. There's no support, no shelter there. It doesn't help. It's worse than a distraction. Your energy should be conserved. But if someone comes and lifts you out of the ocean, that's the solution. And Krishna, please pick me up out of this ocean of material existence. Your mercy is there, I know. The connecting link is there. Let me take shelter there in my relationship with you. So, to be continued in our next session, Prabhupada's purports and Acharya's commentaries are very revealing. It's very relevant. To how to move, just as Prabhupada said, we study very carefully this history of Bharat Maharaj, and we can very clearly understand how to become free from material attachment. And the consequence of being inattentive to our material attachments, where our material attachments lie, and cultivating them, because we're attached to them. And it can spoil our spiritual life. Okay. Any discussion? Yes.
But perhaps didn't have any association, was that one of the factors?
He didn't have any what?
He do practice in association with the
world. Okay.
He was
out in the forest alone. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So my question is that if he had some association with that,
hey, that's a great idea. So if you're going to go to the forest, go with the bunnies. That's the message. Yes?
What I'm saying is that you could have in the mind here, or...
Sure. No, but you're saying, that's what you're saying. We should... always stay in the association of devotees. And when devotees tap you on the shoulder and say, Prabhu, look out, you're heading for the ditch. You don't go, leave me alone, I know what I'm doing. Something like that, okay. Yes. I'm listening. It doesn't specify who his spiritual master was, although his father, being an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, one can assume he abundantly instructed his sons. Some portion of his instructions we find, but one can assume that throughout his life he was abundantly instructed. And one can assume, although it doesn't mention, that his father made an arrangement for someone to continue to guide his son in the course of being a king. Does that help? Yes. He was praying which? Well, he was praying, please give me the intelligence to make the proper choice. Here's the... May my intelligence, concentrating on the Lord, not be covered by anything. And what I just read is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on the prayer that he was reciting regularly, his self-spontaneous prayer. So his understanding, we'll go back, and his understanding was the Lord is maintaining all living entities in this material world, those that are spiritually inclined and those that are materially inclined. He's maintaining all living entities. He's maintaining them by intelligence. That is, someone has a material desire, the Lord gives them material intelligence, how to fulfill that material desire. And through that intelligence, they're maintaining themselves. But it's actually the Lord who's maintaining them. He's supplying the objects, he's supplying the intelligence, he's supplying everything. Now, for the spiritually minded soul, he's also supplying intelligence. How to stay fixed in remembrance of the Supreme Lord. It takes intelligence to keep the mind steady. spiritual intelligence. And it's possible. Although the mind, chanchala hima, not Krishna. The mind is very flickering. The mind can also be fixed. But one needs proper intelligence. Not material intelligence, but spiritual intelligence. So he's praying for that spiritual intelligence. And may that spiritual intelligence never become covered by anything. Now supposing you pray like that a lot, and then you stop. Like, in spiritual life, there's no, what is it, Prabhupada uses the phrase, resting on your laurels. You know what that means? What that phrase means? You've done something good, so you've earned some credit or some laurels. You've done something good, you've done something good, you've done something good, and then you coast. Like, you know, riding a bicycle up a hill, up a hill, up a hill, up a hill, up a hill. Now you're on a plateau. So just stay on the plateau for a while. That's resting on your laurels. Prabhupada's comment, as soon as you slacken in your submission unto the Supreme Lord, immediately there's no resting on your laurels. I've done so much devotional service, I deserve a break. A little vacation from devotional service, please. That consciousness should not enter. Because submission to the Supreme Lord and devotional service to the Supreme Lord, that's the soul's constitutional position. No break from being constitutionally who you are. That's who you are. But the material pattern is, I work hard, now I want a vacation. Boga, tyaga, sankalpa, vikalpa. That's the platform of the mind that's not guided by superior intelligence. Superior intelligence says, continue to remain fixed upon the personality of Godhead. That's our life and soul. He had a choice. Correct. Yes. Why didn't Krishna intervene as he had requested him to in the past? Please protect me from this mistake that I could make when I make it. So he made the mistake. Why didn't Krishna intervene and protect him? Okay, we're already into the next session's topic. So I could say, hold your question for the next session, because it was also asked over here. But we'll go there. We'll just have a longer morning session. And then I'll repeat it again in the next session. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur analyzes your question. And it's several pages later. But he says, there's no question of karma for Bharat Maharaj. Because of his devotional service, his karma was gone. that there was something from his past that is now coming before him. It's not karma. He says, so there's two kinds of prarabdha karma. One is material. And material prarabdha karma is involving the conditioned soul in the reactions to his past misdeeds. And it's it's misfortune. But then there's auspicious or fortunate, where a devotee, like Bharat Maharaj, or when that day comes, the word by accomplished devotees, Krishna may put before us some kind of something that is reminiscent of the past, and we can make then the decision to surrender to Krishna and thereby release ourselves permanently from any worldly sojourn. That's auspicious. And it can be something favorable, it can be something unfavorable, and it can be something like this, apparently reasonably neutral. There's this little deer, and you help the little deer, and move on. But he didn't. So one way of looking at it was, he chose, even though Krishna's reminding him otherwise, he chose no. I was saying like that, but don't pay attention to that. I want to go over here. And I'm convinced I'm right. So like the Krishna channel is shut down. If we leave the Krishna channel open, Krishna will protect us. That's his promise, and he does. But you shut the channel down, you get no signal. You're on your own. Krishna hasn't forgotten, but we can be forgetful. Even if we ask Krishna, if I start to become forgetful, please tap me on the shoulder. So I'm not alone, I'm with Krishna. And Krishna's tapping me on the shoulder. I'm not even leave me alone. Just I'm not even paying attention. And in such circumstances, one way of looking at this is, Krishna does not interfere with that exercise of free will. He doesn't force himself, even though I asked him before, please force yourself upon me if I become forgetful. Krishna doesn't. Then another explanation that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives is, it's more subtle, but it's very interesting. This appears like inauspicious prarabdha karma, where it causes a fall down, but actually it was an intervention by Krishna to make sure, because he prayed that way, that he would never make that mistake again. So he allowed him to be forgetful, so that he would become attached to the deer, and then he would die and become a deer, and then he becomes Jagrat, and no way is he going to become forgetful again. He was fulfilling that desire. Although it wasn't the way that he was perhaps thinking that Krishna would protect him, Krishna was protecting him. An expression that I have grown accustomed to use from experience is, when you surrender to Krishna, please remember it's on his terms. It's not your terms. When you may be thinking, surrender to Krishna, Krishna's going to do like this, and then Krishna's going to do like that, and Krishna's going to do the other thing because I surrendered unto Krishna. But it doesn't work like that. When you surrender unto Krishna, it's on his terms. So in this case, his terms, one way of looking at it is, okay, I'll give you that protection by allowing you the experience of making the wrong choice, learning the hard way, becoming Jan Bharat, and not making the mistake again, giving you that intelligence in that way, so it will never happen again. Two ways of looking at it. Yes?
Just to continue, Maharaj, that what Narachand is saying, that even for the state of bhava, there is still a chance of falling, but prema comes not. Is that what happens? Is that what happens?
It's more elaborately discussed in Madhurya Kadambini, where I can't recreate, because it's like pages long. I can't recreate it in a simple way. But the most important of the causes of anarthas is the offense to the holy name, the offenses that arise from the chanting of the holy name. And in the case of offenses that arise from the chanting of the holy name, they're almost completely eradicated in the bhava stage. But one has to come to the prema stage before they're completely eradicated, and that's the some little trace can cause fall down, even in the bhava stage, when it comes to offense against the holy name. Very elaborate explanation given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He fell down quickly. You can fall down very easily, but you can to climb it takes some time. This seems like common sense. Supposing you're climbing a mountain, it may be difficult to climb, but it's easy to fall. Yeah. Well, it may not be like that, but quickly. Supposing you run into a patch of, like, devotional service becomes really difficult. When you slacken in your chanting, first it becomes sloppy, then it becomes like stop, and then you wake up, I've been very foolish. Now you try to get back in your chanting. What happens? It doesn't happen like that. You have to pay the price for your mistakes. You have your hand up, right? Before you had your hand up. Would you like to ask a question? Please do.
How can a neophyte feel protection in that circumstance?
How can a neophyte do what?
Feel protection in that circumstance that Krishna will protect. Because Krishna won't intervene with our intentions, with our preview.
Well, even when we're, even at present, what's happening with our free will? It's mixed. Krishna's interfering through the agency of his devotees, through the agency of other living entities that may be causing, you know, some remembrance of Krishna, or maybe causing some pain and suffering due to our forgetfulness. They are also reminders. He doesn't force us, that's the point. He can give us reminders, but he doesn't force us. And that way, free will is still operative. But Krishna's compassion is also operative. But he doesn't force us. Yes?
In general, it's the quality and goodness, and in contrast,
the position of passion, where one is not reflective, one just reacts. Stimulus response and no space in between. Mode of passion. I like, I don't like. It's just impulse. Stimulus response. And mode of goodness is you catch yourself. Don't just respond. You reflect. And then you reflect upon principles. Be guided by principles. During our GBC meeting, when we were looking at some situation, a group of us were in a room together, and you know, something unfortunate happened, and we were considering together what should be done about this something unfortunate that happened. And after that, we didn't reach a conclusion. We're just, you know, contemplating. And after the discussion, one younger devotee, younger than me, devotee, asked for some advice. You know, how do we approach situations like this? Because it's real easy to just, like, you know, take action. Because some were calling action. And he said, what to do? And, you know, I have different roles. It's like I have different hats. And so I can look through this lens with this hat on, or put that hat on, look through that lens, and I get confused. So what's some advice? My advice was, take your hats off, like on the upadis, and you think of, here's a spirit soul, and they want to serve Krishna, and they do very nice service to Krishna. Now, here's a shortcoming. As their servant, what can I do to be of service to this soul, to complement their strengths and to help them in some way with their shortcomings? That's the reflective space. And think principle. Don't think, you know, win-lose. Think principle. What are principles that are to be applied? And he said, my father tells me the same thing. So whatever you do, don't lose the principles that you value and that really truly should govern life. And stand by your principles and be governed by your principles. And don't be self-righteous about it, but, you know, be guided by that. Because there's multiple principles and you have to balance principles. But so one principle is we're servants. It's like universal. And here's a soul that wants to go to Krishna. How can I be of service to help them go to Krishna? And you may not have an answer to that question. At least not right away. But if you continue to think in that way, Krishna will give you the intelligence how to better do it than just being reactive. Now, that conversation took place maybe 10 days ago, and today, the complexion of the circumstance has changed a whole lot. A whole lot of understanding has surfaced that wasn't there that evening that we were contemplating. And a whole lot more light is now there upon the subject, so that that particular individual has a much better idea of how to best be of service to that individual and the circumstance that we were discussing surrounding that individual. Because there was this pause, this reflective, how can I be of service? And the more you go down that path of being the servant of others, it becomes, you know, it's a nice path. It doesn't take so much time. It's not so uncomfortable and awkward. It's like very natural. And you become empowered servant. And then as empowered servants, situations sometimes become more complex. You know, it's more challenging. And that's okay. That's life. Then we just apply the same principle. Get in this reflective space that says, I'm a servant. You know, saint. Here's a spirit soul. They have something wonderful to offer. They have some shortcomings, as do I. How can I best overcome my shortcomings? How can I be of service to others that may have some shortcomings? And I better be very clear what the picture of their shortcomings are, because I may not have the full picture. Like that. It's a word of goodness.
And the fact is also in the sense that we say that you consult, you keep consulting, anything, pretty much like, in your initial lecture class, and you said that Yudhishthira Maharaj, first thing he did is he asked Yudhishthira questions. He asked what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And means it seems to be very inherent in him, this quality. But then, neither many times not so accustomed to be like that.
Mm.
And then, how to share these inherent qualities?
It's okay. So he's a Kshatriya, and we know that Kshatriyas are ruled by passion. So he wants to like do things. Accomplish things, get things done. That's passion. But it's part of a deeper, even, culture in him that he's respecting wisdom. And although he may already know, he wants the enrichment of his wisdom, deepen the realization, and expand his, not just like information, but expand his capacity to act always virtuously and always rightly, and in the right, you know, in the right application of things that he knows, so that he's that's a character or a trait or it's building of character when one has that. Just in Yudhishthira's case, it's just an inbuilt, ingrained component of him. There are times when he has to act in that capacity towards his brothers, for example. They go to him and say, and he says, wisdom should prevail. But when doing so, he's guided by others who have greater wisdom than himself. That's just part of the nature of a great person. They're a great servant of others who are greater than them. That makes them a good leader. A good leader is a good servant of others. It's just part of character. How does one get something? It's descending. It's part of character. And our material culture doesn't teach that. It's, you know, go get it. You can do it. I'll give you all the convincing arguments that says you can do it. look at, you've accomplished this and this and this and that and the other thing and the other thing, and how did you accomplish it? You went out and got it done, so go and get it done. Katsahamiti mangate. You can do it. Yeah, I can do it. Yeah. And that's no culture. That's the culture of no culture. That's our upbringing. And where there's culture, one doesn't do like that. Well, from childhood, one learns this. Share this one thing. As a person growing up in the West, not having that culture, one of the things that I heard Prabhupada say maybe 25 times, maybe more than that, was the system of Gurukula, where the student goes to school and he stays in the ashram of his teacher and he learns that everything is the property of the teacher. He goes out during the day on the order of the teacher, and he accepts alms, and he brings back the alms, and he gives them to the teacher. And if the teacher neglects to call him for his meal, he will fast. Like, how many times did I hear Prabhupada say that? Like, you know, why does Prabhupada keep emphasizing that? Are there so many things he can emphasize? He's emphasizing that again and again and again. And at the other one, we'll see all women as mother. Matra bhat paradari shu. How many times have heard that? So it's two things. It's when he gives to the spiritual master, it's the property of the spiritual master. He has no right over that. If he has right over that, he could say, hey, he doesn't go to the teacher and say, you forgot to ask us to come for a meal. And don't forget, I went out and collected all that stuff. He's trained not like that. It's the property of the spiritual master. He's dependent upon the mercy of the spiritual master who he's serving. Although all my service is for him. It's not, you know, business deal. I went and got, no, I'm hurry up, I'm hungry. Look, I'm just a kid. And it's time for lunch. And you know, you're guilty of child abuse. You didn't call me for lunch. I'm going to go tell the child protection office. And I've got my rights. It's part of training. So that when he grows up, whatever he earns, it's not mine. It's the property of the spiritual master and Krishna. Now they may designate, you can use it like this, this, and the other, but it's, you know, it's theirs. I learned that from childhood. I'm the servant. They're the master. So minus that training and culture, it's the other one. You're smart, you can do it. Work hard, go out and study and achieve and accomplish and go. But that's not culture. That's material competition. It leads in the wrong direction. Whatever accomplishment it may lead to, it's heading in the wrong direction. And same with the other one. All women except one's wife is seen as mother, not just my mother, but all women are seen as mother. It doesn't matter. All women other than one's wife are seen as mother. So that when one grows up, that's how one sees. It's not like here's an object that I can potentially enjoy. If that culture is missing, that's what happens. Okay. Last question. Oops. Last. I want to know that as you say, we should always take gradual steps in our Krishna consciousness according to our level, but I always expect very high from my capacity and finally get discouraged and lose my hopes, what to do? Well, follow the advice instead of neglecting the advice. That's change your way of operating. And then, you know, the note says, yeah, but. And to that I say, well, if you stay with the yeah, but, then you're going to have the problem. If you want to relieve yourself of the problem, do it a little differently. You have a choice to make. And cultivate that choice and get some little support structure that will help you make the right choices, like the gradual ones instead of the unrealistic ones. Then you get disappointed. Okay. Well, 1 hour over schedule.
Yeah.